Welcome to This Is Not About Your Body, where we talk about all the real shit body image issues are actually about, because they're never just about the way you look. I'm your host, Jessie Nealand, and today I'm going to be talking all about the season finale of The Bachelorette. I will be unpacking some of the criticism and backlash to it, as well as dissecting some of the patterns of insecurity and sort of wounded behavior that we saw in the lead, Jen Tran, including which of the four body image avatars I think she is and why that matters. I haven't done a podcast episode in a while, but I decided I wanted to talk about this both because I love reality TV and I think it's fascinating, and also because I have so much to say about where we can see these patterns, the super familiar patterns that I see in my coaching practice as a body image coach all the time, and we are seeing play out in real time on Jen's season of The Bachelorette. So I just think it's a super interesting and relatable place to kind of unpack some of this stuff. So if you like this episode and want to hear more examples of people in pop culture being broken down as far as like what their body image avatars might be and what that means and what we can take away from that, please let me know in the comments or find me on Instagram and send me a DM, or join my Patreon because you can chat with me there, leave me a comment. I love to hear from you, and I really find this kind of stuff fascinating. So I'm dying to hear kind of if this hits for you guys or if this is just something that I particularly find interesting. So hit me up and let's dive in. So I want to start by saying that if you don't watch shows like this, if you're not into reality TV, I don't blame you. You can feel free to skip this episode. Personally, I love them. I love exploring what we can learn about sort of cultural messages surrounding sex and relationships and dating and all that stuff. And this one was a pretty big one, right? So this was one of the most criticized finales in the Bachelor franchise history. I think that if you want to stick around, by the way, and you haven't seen The Bachelor, I will give you as much context as possible so that this won't totally make no sense whatsoever. Basically, The Bachelorette is a show where one woman goes on dates, you know, like 25 to 30 men over the course of the season. She narrows it all down, giving them each a rose to stick around for another week until she essentially, in a most or a lot of the seasons, ends with a proposal with her final guy. This was Jen Tran, so this was a historically important season because she was the first Asian-American bachelorette in franchise history. They are obviously trying. They've gotten a lot of criticism for sort of, you know, implicit racism and not casting diverse people, especially the leads of the show. The Bachelor and The Bachelorette have both only in recent years been anyone but a white person, basically. So they are trying to respond to this call culturally for more diverse representation. Jen Tran was the first Asian American lead of the show. Unfortunately, because I actually think she did a pretty great job as the lead, she wasn't my favorite bachelorette. Like I didn't personally connect to her in a lot of ways. Part of that being that she was very young. I think she was 26. And granted, most of the bachelorettes are in their late 20s, but lately we've been seeing them be a little bit older, a little bit more mature, have a little bit more experience. So personally, I didn't connect with her in certain ways. But I actually think that made for a really interesting season, as we're going to talk about, because it allowed us to see some really familiar wounding for someone who is in their mid-20s. And I think they handled the fact that, you know, she comes from Vietnamese culture really beautifully. Like, I think that the representation was not weird or racist the way that it could have been. It was all handled okay. However, in the finale, she's gotten tons of support, but the franchise has gotten a ton of criticism for basically not protecting her in a whole lot of really important ways. And it just feels like they would have protected a white lead in a different way, or that it almost felt like, well, here's this woman whose sort of humanity is less important to protect. And so they are getting a ton of backlash and criticism for specifically how the finale went, as well as other factors throughout the season, such as the fact that she was cast with a bunch of shitty guys, basically, like some really shitty guys who have had like allegations of sexual assault called out against them, that like they could have done some digging and not cast guys like that, but either they didn't do their digging and due diligence to protect her, or they just didn't care. So there's some weird stuff that makes it feel like from the beginning, Jen was not protected, and that they often don't protect their leads of color in an appropriate way, especially knowing that there is so much racism that's going to show up in the viewership that they should be taking for far more steps to protect their leads of color, knowing that they're gonna have to face some of that stuff in the mainstream culture. And it felt like they just did not do that for Jen. So a lot of criticism coming forth about this finale in particular. And I want to start by saying part of the issue for that is that it was widely rumored that The Bachelorette was going to be one of the other two most popular fan favorites from the most recent season of The Bachelor. Their names are Maria and Daisy. Apparently, they have both confirmed that, yes, they were sort of asked to be The Bachelorette and were moving forward with that and then declined. And Maria declined at the very last second, so they had to sort of scramble to get Jen cast as The Bachelorette. And what is really unfortunate about that last-minute scramble, not necessarily production's fault, obviously, to have someone pull out at the last minute, but they really didn't do a lot to protect Jen in the fact that most of the men who came on this season to date The Bachelorette were hoping it would be one of those other two women, two white women, who were, again, fan favorites, expected to be The Bachelorette. So a lot of the guys who came on the show were actually hoping or expecting or applying to do so with other women in mind and not Jen. And therefore, there was a bunch of drama throughout the season in different ways. This was referenced multiple times, and it really does feel like it set Jen up for a lot of shit she didn't deserve and should have been handled more carefully or differently, because the men weren't really there for her. And again, just it ended up putting her through the ringer with some shitbags of men. That said, the big plot line for the season was that Jen had a history of being in relationships with men who had treated her like shit. And she talks about it a lot. Clearly, she calls them toxic relationships. One of them, at least, I would say she's dancing around calling it an abusive relationship. She's very clearly in the current process of healing throughout the season. So we see her talking about this. I used to be like this. I'm trying to break those patterns. I used to not know my worth or not know what I deserved. I now know what my worth is and that I deserve love. Like, she is just barely cracking the surface of these sort of life lessons in her self-concept, which is honestly kind of riveting and fascinating and a bit empowering even to see someone who's so new to those like massive life-changing moments of like, wait a second, I think that actually I deserve better than to be treated like shit. You can see that I don't know if she's actually in therapy or has done therapy, but there's a big vibe of like she has done a lot of healing and is just in the beginning of that process of healing starting to work. So she comes into the season, she's like, I don't want to repeat the past. She's never had a man say they ever loved her, apparently. She's very much identified as someone who does a lot of emotional labor for people who don't deserve it, you know? Like, she has super high empathy and super low standards, gives men a lot of latitude to treat her like shit and not take her seriously or give her the respect she deserves or, you know, kind of show up for her in the ways that she would show up for them. And so there is a very people-pleasery vibe in all of that, that she's like giving and giving to these men who just don't deserve it. She talks a lot about breaking these patterns, wanting to have higher standards, knowing her worth now, knowing that she deserves better than that bullshit that she wants to put behind her. And the big villain of the season, until the finale anyway, was a guy called Sam M, who honestly was so horrible in so many ways. Watching him, every moment of him on my screen made my skin crawl. I would say, you know, the label of like narcissistic abuse, like he showed red flag after red flag after red flag. We could also just call it shitty guy behavior, but it's shitty guy behavior that she is clearly familiar with, right? So again, she doesn't give us a ton of detail about these toxic relationships in her past, but I think we can pretty clearly see from how comfortable and familiar she is with the way this asshole treats her that it was probably very similar to that. That he there's a total lack of respect for her as a whole person, a lack of curiosity about her, her feelings, her story. He talks about himself all the time. Every question that she asks him about, like, you know, what do you like about me? He talks about himself, you know. There's very little empathy for her feelings and experience. I would say that he clearly seems to see himself as the main story and sees her as like a prop or a resource to use to sort of further that story rather than as a full person deserving of full respect and dignity. I get the sense that he would absolutely not want a wife. I mean, if in fact he is dating to marry, as is the conceit of the show, he would not want a wife who was a full person, right? He wants a wife who shows up and checks the boxes in his life, who takes care of him and doesn't interrupt his life in any way, doesn't demand anything from him. So it all kind of culminates in this very empowering and satisfying episode where Jen actually catches on. Sometimes the leads don't catch on to people's bullshit and you just watch them like pick them in the end and it's just so awful to watch. This was a satisfying one because Jen catches on. She starts grilling him, basically trying, giving him opportunity after opportunity to not be a shithead, and he graciously declines her opportunities and chooses to be a shithead anyway. Basically, this is who he is, right? She's like, could you tell me what you like about me? And all he has to say is like, you know, I want a wife and you could be that wife and I'm here to find my wife and I just really love how you care about people. And she's like, oh, how do you know I care about people? Because he has not been paying attention, does not have any details that he can reflect that show he has ever listened to her or anything. And he says, you know, he sort of negs her a little bit. It's like, well, either you are a good person or you're full of shit, you know, like, and he's the one of the ones throughout the season who says, to be honest, when I got out of that limo and saw you for the first time on the first night, I knew you weren't my type. I had thought it was going to be one of these other two women, Daisy or Maria. But I think I'm looking for my wife and you could be that. So he sucks so bad. He's so hateable. And honestly, what happens to her in those spaces like sucks really bad. But we are seeing her catch on, which is great. He treats her pretty shitty. He offers almost nothing, and there's a lot of chemistry between them. And sometimes that is enough for the lead just to make the bad decisions and sort of stay unable to see what's really going on there. She did eventually catch on, sends him home. It's fabulous, honestly. I was cheering for her so hard during this episode. It was wonderful. But it is very clear, again, just sort of going back to the backlash that the franchise is getting, that the casting and production of her season did not take appropriate care to make sure that she was protected and treated well, treated with respect. Honestly, outside of Sam M, this was just the worst group of men I think we've seen from this show in a really long time. Nobody deserved that. And the fact that so many of them got so far is infuriating. But there was a lot of this in her group of men, a lot of men who clearly saw her as like a prop in his own story that did not see her as fully empowered and sort of deserving of taking up space in a relationship, but were just looking for a wife who would kind of do all the emotional labor and not bother them too much. And that is, I hate this so much. Obviously, we know those men exist, but again, inside of a show like this, like, you're casting the dudes. You can make sure they're not a bunch of shitheads, please. However, what I want to talk about today is what I saw and what we can learn from Jen's personal growth and healing journey as she is sort of this newly recovering, newly healed person. And that I see her as a combination of two of the body image avatars that I talk about in my work. So if you're not familiar with this, in my book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, and also in other areas of my work, like on social media and YouTube and in my courses and everything, I talk a lot about this. My whole coaching practice is based around body neutrality, and I've come up with a system called the four body image avatars to help everybody sort of locate themselves on the map of what could be going on under the surface of your insecurities that are driving body image issues so that you can then have a better chance of actually overcoming them. So I don't know that Jen struggles with body image specifically. She doesn't talk about it. If she does, that's not a plot point that we have on her. I do feel that after, you know, over a decade of coaching people in this space, I am an incredible read on people just based on things like body language and how they present themselves. But I am not going to sit here and assume that she struggles with body image. I hope she doesn't. But I will say that the four body image avatars also because the body image is never really about the way you look, the avatars also kind of aren't, right? Like, they're a good place to start and they are designed for people who are struggling with body image issues. But I think it could also be said that they are designed and accurately break down all manner of like low self-worth, insecurity, and, you know, the kind of wounds that go into how we end up not feeling worthy. So in that way, she talks a lot about that. So that's why I feel comfortable enough using these labels for her a little bit. Like, obviously I am just sort of an armchair expert over here. This is my work. So I feel very confident in what I'm saying, but at the same time, I've never met Jen, so I don't know. But this isn't necessarily based on her talking about body image issues so much as low self-worth issues. So the way that I see Jen is a very common combination of the self-objectifier and the outsider. These are two of the avatars that form a powerful combination that I see all the time in my coaching practice. So the way that I look at it is the underlying purpose or, you know, kind of reason that a person is struggling with low self-worth or body image issues is that there is a strategy in place, essentially, a subconscious strategy usually, in which the body image issues or the low self-worth are serving a purpose somehow, or at least they are attempting to serve a purpose to try to protect you or try to help you in some way. So that's what all of my coaching is about. And self-objectifier, generally, we're looking at somebody who has learned through experience in our culture most often of being objectified or being fetishized or sexualized or valued in a way that strips them of their full humanity, that in order to have worth, they must give men what they want from them. Like, they must be attractive, they must be nurturing, they must be, you know, offer them sexual gratification. And basically, like, through the lens, almost the male gaze is like the dominant lens through which a self-objectifier is often seeing themselves, because they've learned that their worth in the world, in order to be worthy and deserving of good things and able to have the relationships and attachment relationships that they want, that they must appeal to men. So that is often what we're looking at for a self-objectifier. And the outsider is somebody who is often associating their worthiness or a sense of safety in the world, ability to get their needs met, essentially, with fitting in, being what everybody else expects them to be, or wants them to be, or likes. Essentially, that is where we get that being highly empathetic and overly attuned to what other people think and feel and want and need from you, being a people pleaser. Often this is people who have never felt like they quite belong anywhere. So this is a very common avatar for people who grew up with immigrant parents, as Jen did, because being bicultural, insofar as like she has Vietnamese culture and she has American culture and she grew up sort of bouncing between the two, it is very common for people in that situation to end up feeling like an outsider, the outsider to the mainstream culture, essentially, and to learn that they need to always do or be whatever other people want them to do or be in order to have worth, in order to be treated well, in order to maintain their relationships, etc. That is the outsider that I see in Jen. The self-objectifier that I see in Jen is that she is a conventionally attractive woman who has learned that the patriarchy rewards women for catering to men, essentially, right? That that she has worth and value and that men will treat her well if she shows up the way that they want her to, which, of course, we have learned that men want women to show up in a very particular way, a very specific way. Whether this is true or not, this is just sort of what we learn through our culture, I think. And this is a combination that is sort of deadly in some ways, and also, as I said, very, very common. To go into a little bit deeper, I want to name some of the ways that we see Jen sort of showing up in both categories, like sort of the avatars together create this, what feels to me anyway, like an inauthentic presentation of self that is focused on what other people think of her, want from her, expect from her, like about her, all these things, right? It's focused on other people, and it obviously inside the setting of the show, it's going to be particularly focused on what men think of her because she is there to date men. But it has that vibe either way of like, essentially learning that your entire worth is based on doing whatever other people want at the same time that you've learned, also, I will be valued from men if I cater to men. So the way that we learn that essentially men want us to be, and the way that I see Jen operating in the world, is different from other girls, which is very much like a pick me type of trait that we use that term in our sort of cultural current vernacular to basically refer to somebody who caters to men in this particular way, sort of throws other women under the bus in order to do it, in order to get like approval and validation of men. But she presents herself in a lot of different ways as different from other girls. She presents herself as sort of the exception to a lot of sexist stereotypes or rules about women that are negative that men tend to complain about. For example, like there's certainly a stereotype out there that women don't like sports or video games or other sort of man-coded hobbies, you know? And she's very much like, not like other girls. She loves all forms of sports and exercise. So that's very much a present part of her persona on the show. And especially with the men, like, I'm just down to play any sport at any time. I'm certainly not saying that that's not true. Just sort of noting that the whole package of all these qualities together does add up to a feeling that she's probably been rewarded for that by men in a very particular way, given special status for being not like other girls, because she's down to play lacrosse or soccer at any moment. You know, like, I love sports. Also, of course, we have stereotypes about women being critical or demanding or having high expectations or standards for her male partner. This is something that men, you know, will regularly complain about. Therefore, the ideal and the different from other girls version of this is to be super laid back, low key, low maintenance, really chill, not demanding, right? And Jen very much exhibits that kind of persona, like doesn't require too much from the men. What's interesting is because you can see her growth at the same time that we see the old wounds and patterns, is she bounces back and forth between the two of like, I know my worth, I demand better, at the same time that, like, you know, one scene later or one scene before, we will see her absolutely present like, I'm so chill and laid back. Another stereotype would be being too emotional or being too difficult or asking for too much empathy or communication or care from a partner, right? Making him compromise or inconveniencing himself or asking him to do any labor on her behalf in any way, asking for equitable emotional labor. These are things that women are taught we're special and different and better and should be treated with special status from men if we say we don't want those things. We're not emotional. We're really laid back and chill. We're not difficult. We would never ask for too much from you. We just want to take care of you, you know? There is, again, that just, we get praised, we get rewarded by men in our culture for showing up the way they want us to show up, and then we get punished for showing up the opposite way. You know, every woman that I know has been insulted by a man, or at least it was intended to be an insult, that they were too difficult or too emotional, or, like, you know, asked for too much communication or empathy or whatever. So this is used as a weapon to teach us how to act and how to behave and what men like. And I have absolutely no doubt that Jen has experienced all of those things as well. And then the stereotype of, like, women have low sex drive, or they're sort of sexually lifeless or passive. So therefore, being exceptional and not like other girls is to sort of always be kind of kinky and horny, you know, hypersexual, I guess, is a way of putting it, almost like down for anything that centers his desires, though, not necessarily like looking to make sexual demands of him, just sort of down to please him or down for whatever would excite him. So it's still sort of non-threatening and presented in like a cute and feminine way. But I see a lot of that in Jen's behavior as well, that she makes a lot of like sexual jokes and puns and like little sort of like wink, wink kind of comments that just sort of, like, to me, clearly worked as a strategy for her to get men to think about sex and associate her with sex and therefore get excited about her and be more likely to reward her and see her as special. Like, you know, oh, I was pursuing this other girl and she never wanted to have sex and was always telling me we needed to slow down. But, like, here's a girl who's ready to go, you know, that would be rewarded. And likewise, again, just being selfless and nurturing. Again, this is all just how to take up no space whatsoever in a relationship and center him in all things, that this is rewarded and considered special and exceptional. So these are all like massively misogynistic tropes, obviously, and playing into being an exception to them, like Jen does in some ways, or at least we see some of how that strategy might be playing out subconsciously, it does reinforce them. So I don't support doing this, but I also fully understand it. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. I've actually been there. I've done these things. So I don't think that she's doing any of it consciously. It just feels good to be seen as special. And doing these things will make men treat you like you're special and exceptional. It feels good to get validation and approval, especially if you have not gotten enough of that and this is a chronically unmet need for you, or you have a lot of scarcity around feeling like it's something you can access, then this is going to be an effective strategy for getting you attention and approval and validation in a way that is going to feel good. I often describe this as like, it's like diet ice cream. Like, we all were born with a human need for connection. We have these needs for attention and validation and approval and connection and attachment and all of these things. And that is normal. But what we really crave and what really fills that tank for us would be like the full fat, full sugar dairy version of that dessert. You know what I mean? Like, it would be a real genuine connection and people really seeing you for who you really are in the fully expressed authentic version of you. But when that doesn't feel possible, and we learn usually pretty early on, like in childhood, that that's not possible, that we'll actually be punished for showing all of ourselves, that we will lose connection if we're too emotional, too difficult, too demanding, not nurturing enough, not sexy enough. Like, when you've had those experiences, it makes sense to set aside plan A for the full fat, full sugar version of what you want and go after plan B, which is like, you know, the zero sugar, zero carb, fat-free, dairy-free, gluten-free version of this dessert, which is like, it kind of scratches the itch. You know, you eat it and you go, this is close to what I wanted. I don't think it fills the tanks very well, and it certainly doesn't have a lasting impact, but it is close. And when that's all you've ever learned is possible, it's what you go after, right? If that is the only dessert you've ever been taught is available to you, you will order that dessert every time. That is what I see happening. And I know, as much as Jen talked about knowing her worth and what she deserved throughout the season, I saw a lot of those old echoes of that old pattern. And that makes sense, because growth and healing in this way, it's like an upward spiral, right? It's not an on and off switch. You're not broken or wounded or hurting or low self-worth, and then you flip a switch and it's all the opposite. Like, you move upward. Every opportunity to grow and go deeper and break patterns and learn about yourself takes you a little bit more healed and in the right direction. I see her doing all of that work. It's sometimes even actively on screen, which was so fascinating. But there is for sure the sense that you get that Jen has never learned that she could have plan A, you know, like the fully satisfying dessert. And so she has often gone after this shitty, unsatisfying dessert and is only recently aware that she can do better than that. So we see her objectifying herself and fetishizing herself in all of these little ways, little sex jokes and puns. And honestly, almost just seems unconscious. Like, when she'll say one to a man with a dazzling smile, sort of implying like, I'm horny, kinky, down to fuck dream girl, you know? And then she'll kind of catch herself and change topics or whatever. So I see, to me, that's like, oh yeah, this was a knee-jerk pattern that you used to do, and you're trying to break out of it, which is very cool and compelling. But we also see incredibly low standards in general, like a willingness to empathize with and justify and excuse men's shitty behavior, men who are giving her the very damn least and jumping on the smallest sign of their care or curiosity or kindness to keep things going, even though the man clearly doesn't see her as a whole person, but is kind of thinking of her as a prop or a prize in their own life. So this is something we see all the time in mainstream representation, because this is a thing that exists all the time in human people. And this is something I see in my coaching practice so often. And again, it is that really unique, potent combination of the self-objectifier and the outsider. Like, they can fuse into this really powerful force where it feels impossible to be your full self, because you have only ever learned that you must be what other people want you to be in order to be deserving of respect or kindness or love. And that, in fact, if you were your full whole self, if you actually took up space and made demands of the people who are, you know, you're pursuing a relationship with or whatever, that they would abandon you. They would leave. They would reject you. They would criticize you. Maybe they would even attack you for, like, how dare you ask me to do this labor for you? That's your job. Like, I'm dating you so that you take care of me. Like, I'm not supposed to take care of you. This is a very common thing we see. It has a lot of gendered implications under patriarchy, although certainly anybody can be any combination of avatars. This is not gender exclusive, but it is gendered in the way that we often see women learning that in order to be worthy of love by a man, if they are dating and wanting to be in relationships with men, that they must basically hide and suppress all kinds of true things about who they really are and what they really want in order to make it easy on him so that he doesn't leave. So that he doesn't get annoyed or feel frustrated or overwhelmed or overloaded. Basically, we learn, I think, a lot of us unfortunately learned, that the goal for men in dating women is to find the one who bothers them the least, right? Who, like, has the least demands of them, who inconveniences them the least. And at the same time, who meets their needs in other ways, like who offers them, you know, a sexy, fun, bubbly exterior, who makes their lives prettier and happier and easier, and who does all the emotional labor and will totally run the family, you know, take care of the kids and do all the chores. And, like, that is what we learned an ideal woman is for men, that that's what they want. And so Jen is actively unlearning those things, that she's allowed to take up space in relationships with men, to have boundaries and standards for their behavior. And I think a really big one is to expect empathy, communication, and mutual equitable emotional labor and care from a man, when that is not what most of us learned men are looking for or willing to do or believe they should have to do. So most of us learned men like us best when we don't ask them to do all that stuff. Therefore, in order to find a partner who's going to love me, I have to not ask for those things, not expect empathy, communication, or emotional labor, not have boundaries, not have standards. Like, it becomes a strategy for earning love and achieving the relationships that you want, the security that you crave, the love and connection and intimacy that is so wired into us to want as humans, to suppress all of those deeply authentic, important parts of yourself. Now, I want to say that there are men out there who are empathetic, compassionate, respectful, kind, and actively working to dismantle the patriarchy's impact on them, who are working to be less selfish, who are working to be less entitled and more emotionally available, and who see women as fully formed people deserving of equitable relationships, whether they grew up that way and they just feel that way, or they grew up some other way and are sort of actively in the process of unlearning what they learned that was problematic or inequitable, right? So this is by no means to say that this is actually what men want, but it is to say that most of us have experienced these ideas and beliefs and stereotypes, and we have known men who upheld them. So if that's your experience, that's how you're going to show up. And honestly, even on this, like, silly dating show, we do seek good men, or at least, you know, men who present, as I just described, like, respectful, emotionally available, and who view women as fully formed people, although not as many as I would have liked. But part of what we see in this season is the fact that Jen was quite young compared to some other bachelorettes, and so the men are also a bit younger. So there's just not as much time, I think, for those men to have really developed the emotional maturity and intelligence that sort of goes into what we're talking about here, being able to show up as equal partners and not just view women as, like, playthings, rewards, prizes, or props in their own life, caretakers or providers of, you know, sex and care. And of course, there's the last minute casting switch up. So possibly these men weren't quite as motivated to show up well for her because they just weren't as attracted to her because they had signed up hoping it was somebody else. So yeah, we're seeing a lot of emotional immaturity across the board. Even the men who I felt on this season were, like, doing a pretty decent job, it's still, like, the bar is in hell. we're still not seeing men who I would consider dating in my own life, right? Who I'm like, oh yes, you have developed into this person who truly can be an equal partner. But there are definitely better men than some. And I just want to say, like, they are out there. If you struggle with this, if all this feels incredibly true to you and you're like, oh my God, it me, I'm Jen. Like, I don't believe that I will ever find a man who is going to show up and do emotional labor for me in that sort of emotional labor space, who's going to be equally empathetic, who's going to be equally interested in cultivating a healthy, secure attachment with me, who's interested in supporting and seeing me as a whole human person if I don't just show up and take care of them. If that's you, those men are out there. And like I said, some of them have just grown up that way, and that's great. And a lot of them have to emotionally mature as they unlearn a lot of what they learned under patriarchy. For example, that they're entitled to women's bodies and to women's emotional care and attention and time, that women are rewards for their being a good guy-ness. You know, like, these are things that a lot of men, I think, have to unlearn. And therefore, if you're in your early 20s, God bless you, and good luck, because I do feel like for a lot of guys that does take time. But they're out there, right? So we know that even though shitty guys exist, genuinely, emotionally available and respectful men exist as well. But what I'm saying in all of this is, like, I don't think Jen knows that, because she has a history clearly of exposure to the unavailable kind of men, the disrespectful kind of men. So even though, like, she might be able to intellectually agree, yes, those men exist, she doesn't somatically in her body, she's not moving through the world expecting to meet them or trusting that they will be that way. She's moving through the world expecting them to be this other shitty way that she is familiar with and has had a lot of exposure to and clearly had trauma at the hands of. And this is very common. So what I want to explore is the underlying pattern of how those low expectations and catering to what you think men want or need or like about you, basically making yourself so small that you become the easiest choice for him to pick. I want us to talk about how that actually invites more of those shitty guys into your life, which is going to reinforce this sensibility that that's how men are and therefore you can never break this pattern. And I don't know what Jen has been exposed to. So I obviously can't say, like, that she has or hasn't had exposure to good men too. I don't know. My guess is she probably did fairly recently, and that's what started to kickstart this whole growth process for her. But I want to talk about basically the pattern of not having high standards for men, of living in that sort of seeking validation place and fear of abandonment place and trying to sort of shove down the fullness of your humanity and just show up the way they want you to be placed, it has the unwanted effect of inviting the worst kind of men into your life and worst kind of people, if we're being honest. But, like, obviously, dating show, heteronormative assumptions here. But the pattern is basically that when you feel unworthy of taking up space, when you feel afraid that nobody is going to love you or choose you if you take up space and have high standards and demands, you make it clear to the men that you meet that you're a person who doesn't require them to give you space or respect or labor or compassion and empathy and all these things, right? Basically, by feeling like you are afraid to push men away by being too difficult or too emotional or too unappealing because you're a whole human instead of a sexual plaything for them or a nurturing caretaker for them, then you are more likely to play into what they are looking for. But not all men are looking for this thing. You're actually inviting the men who are looking specifically for a woman who they want to exploit or manipulate or use, a woman who won't inconvenience them in any way. You will become so incredibly attractive and appealing to the kind of man who only wants a wife to center and support him in all the ways and play the role of, like, you know, supporting player, prop, prize, reward in his own story. That's who you attract. That's who you become the most attractive to when you're playing this pattern out. So even though it is sort of effective in some ways, that you will get validation, you will get attention, you will be given a sort of exceptional treatment by men. They'll see you as special and different and amazing. You'll be getting all that validation and attention and connection with the wrong kind of men, who are just going to go on to treat you like shit and reinforce the idea that you don't get to take up space and you aren't deserving of true kindness and equality. So it is self-perpetuating in this way. And please hear me, that I am not blaming Jen for the absolute shit sandwich that she ended up with in the finale of basically the man who she chose, who was a safe bet the entire season. I was rooting for him. I liked him a lot. He seemed really genuine, really, really into her, really in love with her. He basically, like, as soon as they got engaged and left the show, changed his mind and acted like a complete asshole, said, I was never in love with you. Basically ghosted her. And immediately started following one of those other women who he had apparently been hoping that the Bachelorette would be on Instagram, Maria, it was like everything that he said they were building. And he basically convinced her over the course of the season that he was this safe person who would never abandon her, and then just turned on a dime in the finale, or after the finale, I should say, and went absolutely the other way. Jen did not. None of that is her fault. She did not do that. I am not blaming her for any of that. But I will say, and I think this is like, please hold this nuance with me, that she was attractive to the people in her group, the men in her group, who loved that she was not going to be too difficult for them. Those were the men who made her feel special, because she was basically, in a lot of ways, even though she was fighting this pattern, she was still showing up in a lot of ways overgiving, over justifying their behavior. You know, she would like have so much empathy for something that he went through, that she, her second runner up, never was basically in love with her, and she kept giving him chance after chance after chance to get there. And it seemed, as we watched it, that it felt reasonable to her that loving her is so difficult that of course he would need more time. She was very, very empathetic to a harmful extent to her own self, to her own detriment, because she was willing to justify a lot of shitty behavior that I would have just been like, oh, absolutely not. You're not that into me. That's okay. I'm going to move on, right? Like, once you are, I mean, I'm obviously a lot older and more experienced in these spaces, but like, once you have an understanding truly that that kind of behavior is not acceptable to you, and you know that your boundaries are safe and fair and that you are worthy of having them, like, you just sort of move those men out of your circle a lot sooner, right? So we saw that she just kept doing this thing where she made so much space for men who didn't make much space for her. And a huge reason is because of that dynamic, because she was showing up and kind of offering them bunch of free passes. Like, you can treat me poorly, and as long as you apologize and tell me why, you know, how you're growing or how that was hard for you or whatever it is, then I will forgive you and we will keep trying. And so even though she kept trying to step into her power and feel really empowered in the way that she showed up, and sometimes she made huge, amazing decisions, like kicking that villain, Sam M, off, we did see that the men who were most connected to her and who were, she was most attractive to, in the end, ended up being men who really just took advantage of that. And that's always going to be the case. We are always going to be attractive to people who, the way that we're showing up, you know, like, if we are not feeling worthy, we're going to be attracted to other people who don't want us to feel worthy. So there is, this is not a blame thing, this is not a fault thing, but there is just always going to be like a vetting system where when you show up and try to be what men want you to be, and that includes stuffing down a whole lot of your own boundaries and standards for what that relationship could or should be, then you're going to attract men who are not going to give more than that. You know, your low standards will be met every time. So I think that this is where, like, I wanted to sort of finish this podcast being like, okay, so what do we do about it? What should Jen do about it? But I don't necessarily want to go to that place around it. if you are genuinely curious what you can do about this, if you're just sitting there being like, oh my God, that's me, read my book. I go into all of this like in so much detail and depth, or reach out for me for coaching. You can find me at jessienealon.com, or, you know, hit me up on Instagram or TikTok, or send me an email through my website or whatever. Like, I work with people to do this work. So if that's you, help is available and that information is available. But I'm not going to go into that today because I don't want to like boil it down into, you know, three easy tips if you're a self-objectifier plus an outsider. Mostly I just want to talk about how if you are in this position, it will feel to you like, I am positive it feels to Jen, who is actively trying to unlearn this throughout the season, but still, I am positive, still believes, at least like her body responds as if this is true. It feels like you have so much evidence that nobody will want you or love you or choose you if you actually are your fullest, most authentic self. If you take up space with your needs, your emotions, your boundaries, your standards, if you expect your partner to do half of the emotional labor in the relationship and show up for you with high levels of skill around empathy and communication and nurturance or care, like, it will feel impossible if you have been locked in this pattern for a long time. And the reason for that is because it's a self-perpetuating cycle. So the thing you have been most afraid of, the thing that your entire strategy of inauthenticity and like people-pleasing has been bringing you, even though it's attempting to help you avoid rejection and abandonment and get your, you know, relationship needs met, it has been bringing you a huge cache of evidence that it is not safe for you to stop using that strategy, to stop using those behaviors. It will feel like the only thing that allows you to be lovable is to take up less space, not more, to have lower standards, not higher, that you will, if you stop doing this, shrinking yourself down for men, you will end up alone. That will feel very, very true, and you have good evidence for it, I am sure, because that's what happens, and I have no doubt that's what happened for Jen. And to be fair, the truth is that when you stop, you will repel some men, right? Like, you literally will experience rejection, abandonment, and disapproval, and a lack of validation. That is a real thing. That is a real part of the healing process. But what you can't know until you try it is that this is a good thing, because you are being rejected, abandoned, disapproved of, and not validated by the men who ultimately suck and who you should want to stay far away from you. And this is true with everybody. It's a vetting system. It's a perfect vetting system. By being your whole full self and treating yourself with the dignity and respect of a whole full person who deserves equal and genuinely like mutually respectful emotional labor and care and communication in a relationship, it will immediately turn off the kind of men who have been hurting you or who keep treating you with disrespect, or, you know, a sort of best case scenario, maybe just keep celebrating and praising and validating you for being so low maintenance. Like, any man who's like, oh my God, my favorite thing about you is that you're so nurturing and supportive and caring, I say run from that man. Maybe you're proud of those qualities about yourself, and that's okay. But if that is the number one or only thing that somebody values in you, then what they really value is what they can get from you. And that is going to keep you stuck in this cycle. And it's going to continue bringing evidence into your life that you don't get to be a full person. You don't deserve equal respect and care. And you don't and won't get your needs met in a relationship. So, yes, breaking this pattern is scary and it is hard. And it will feel in your body sometimes like life and death. But it is worth it, because it is a good thing to turn away and repel the kind of men who are looking for someone to be a prop or prize in their life, who are looking for a partner who never inconveniences them too much, or who are looking for someone who will support them and make them the main character in their own story. Now, to be fair. If you're into all these things, like, I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. But most of the people who I work with, that is not the kind of partnership that they want. And that is not the kind of partnership that they end up with, because they have a pattern and habit of shrinking themselves and really invalidating the parts of themselves that they have learned aren't acceptable or aren't lovable or choosable or desirable because men don't want them to be this full self. Now, I will also say that thinking of it as a vetting system is really helpful because it also is going to change who is attracted to you, not just repel certain men, but also attract certain men, right? It will be easier for a certain kind of person or man to come into your life and connect with you. It will attract a different kind of person because your full authentic self will be extra attractive to the kind of person who's already done the work to see women as whole people and who are looking for an equitable partnership, right? It will make it easier when you have boundaries and feelings and expectations and demands. Like, when you own those things up front, you take up all the space with them up front. The right kind of person who is looking for a genuine equal human partner to be treated with respect and dignity and cultivate a healthy relationship, they're going to fall in love with that, right? They're going to really, really vibe with that. They're going to be able to connect with you in a way that feels super satisfying to them. And that is not possible when you are playing a role. So what I saw in this season is that Jen was bouncing between being able to do that in some moments and then going back to playing a role in others. And my heart breaks for Jen. I think what happened in the finale was absolutely devastating. They did not treat her well. The way that they presented this heartbreak story, like, normally they treat it with a little bit more respect and dignity than they did for Jen. They basically made her watch the entire engagement video, like, footage with this asshole next to her on the couch while she is just visibly breaking down. It just felt awful and disrespectful and really exploitative. But I believe Jen will be fine. I think she will eventually get to the place where she can show up more often or all the time in that empowered state where she knows, at least intellectually already, she knows that she deserves better and that she gets to take up space with her emotions. She gets to insist on her partner caring about her and showing empathy and curiosity and, communicating towards secure relationship building and emotional labor. Like, she knows those things. I believe she will eventually get there and she will be fine. She is young. And this was heartbreaking, and this was handled poorly, and the men that she had were shitty. But I wanted to talk about this because if you are in this position, it can feel like such a terrifying leap to go from this feeling of, like, I have to take up so little space because no man would ever want me if I actually expressed my full self, to expressing your full self and discovering through experience and healing and insight and all of the things that come, like, this work, really, truly, this growth and healing work takes time and practice and experience and exposure. You will be exposed to better people. Better men will be attracted to you. You will have better and better experiences as you heal in this upward spiral. And that will start to teach you on a somatic level, like, your body will respond differently. Your standards will continually get higher and higher, which is what we want. And suddenly when you look back and you're like, I can't believe I dated that guy. Like, a few years ago, that seemed like a great guy. And I look back and I'm like, man, he was doing the absolute least. That is a very normal part of people who jump ship and do this upward spiral healing and growth work. That is what I believe Jen will be able to do. And that is what I wish for you to be able to do if you're in the same position. And if you've already done this, you already know this, right? Like, if you, like me, have some of this in your own history, you know that the best guy you could ever imagine when you were 21 sucks, you know, compared to, like, who you're dating now in your 30s. You just look back and go, like, why did I think it was okay to treat me like that? But at the time, You were like, well, compared to worse, this is actually not bad, you know? So standards should continue to get better and better as you learn about yourself, as you understand and embrace your worth, your value, and the fact that, like, you are actually lovable, you are actually choosable and desirable and all of the things worthy of respect and dignity and all of the good stuff that you crave. And you get to take up space with that and not only get to, but by leading with that, by starting a relationship from that place of owning all of those things and demanding all of those things up front, instead of playing into this idea of like, oh, maybe I'll introduce that stuff later after I've caught him, you know, you are setting yourself up to be attractive to totally different men, better men, and to have way better interactions and relationships with men as you go along, and to actually have the kind of secure relationship or partnership that you crave. So that is my breakdown. I am dying to know what you think. If you watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, please reach out to me. If you are watching this on YouTube, you can leave a comment below and just share your thoughts. Like, do you like this kind of dissection of pop culture reality TV? Do you want to hear me talk about more people in these kinds of spaces and what avatars and patterns I'm seeing there? Is this valuable? Do you have any questions? Like, please leave in the comments, or if you are just listening wherever you get your podcasts, you can find me on Instagram and shoot me a DM. And I love to hear from you. And I am honestly just so curious, like, did you watch this season? What were your thoughts? Do you relate to any of this about Jen? Or was it horrible for you to watch because you don't relate to it in a totally different way? I'm just really want to hear from you. So please feel free to reach out. And that is everything for today. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Like I said, if you want to learn more about how I work with people and what you can actually do about this, if you resonate with any of these issues, find my book, Body Neutral. It's available anywhere that you buy books or ebooks or audiobooks. And check out my Patreon, because I offer a lot of different things, including community calls and course material there. I have a course right now called Fuck the Patriarchy. And actually next month's material will be all about how to build better relationships under patriarchy. So this will be super relevant to that. And it's only $25 a month for that course material. And yeah, I want to hear from you. I want to connect. Let me know your thoughts. And thank you so much for being here. You can find me online at jessienealon.com. And I hope that you have an awesome week. Hey everyone, I'm Jessie Neeland, and I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to this episode of the This Is Not About Your Body podcast. I put out new episodes every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss it. And if you really enjoyed it, please go ahead and leave me a review. Also, if you're looking for more information about body neutrality or you want to work with me, you can find me at my website, jessienealon.com. Or you can just purchase my book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, wherever you buy books, ebooks, or audiobooks. We can also connect on Instagram or TikTok. My handle is Jessie Neeland. And because I make this podcast available for free and without any sponsors or ads, you can also feel free to show your support using the Patreon link in the show notes. And know that your support, if you decide to participate, is always very much appreciated. Lastly, thank you to my brother, Jason Neeland, for creating the music that plays at the beginning of the show. And thank you for listening, learning, and moving toward personal and collective body liberation.